We're back with David Hoey, who is an experienced trial lawyer who specializes in nursing home neglect and abuse cases. David, we were talking about the assessments for decubitus ulcers, and it's done by the nursing staff. What happens next in terms of an elderly patient?
Oh, sure. The assessments are mandated by federal law. So each resident has to be assessed, and they're assessed for multiple things. In this particular scenario, we're talking about whether they're assessed for pressure ulcers, bed sores. So the assessment takes place if they're assessed for a risk of skin breakdown to get bed sores, then federal law mandates that a care plan must be implemented. And the care plan has three parts to it. A problem, resident is at risk for bed sores. A goal, resident will not develop pressure sores over the next 3 months, 6 months, whatever. And then the approach, what they're going to do to make sure that the resident doesn't develop pressure ulcers. And that can include special mattresses. That can include turning and repositioning the resident at least every 2 hours. They can do it more. Skin creams, getting them up out of bed, off the pressure areas, many, many different approaches to do it. And then they need to implement the plan, put it in place, and do the things that they say they're going to do. But they have to have the staff in order to meet all those needs for all the residents of the facility. So that's the part that gets tricky. But I teach nursing home awareness all over the country, mostly to lawyers, but to also to some caregivers. And one of the things that I teach is that a pressure ulcer case, that i.e. bed sore, i.e. decubitus ulcer, is actually six different cases in one. Because if a pressure sore has developed bone deep, and I've seen pressure ulcers the size of a softball, a golf ball, a dinner plate, an orange, and I mark these things as exhibits during depositions to equate with the size of the pressure ulcer or the hole, the rotting hole in somebody's skin. It's actually six different kind of cases in one case. It consists of pain and suffering. It consists of dehydration. It consists of malnutrition. It consists of an infection, sepsis. E. coli can happen. Deformity, because now you're deformed. And the biggest case is a case of dignity, respect and dignity. So a pressure ulcer case, if one has developed to an infected hole in somebody's skin because of the lack of relieved pressure, relieving the pressure, or not following the care plan, or not properly assessing, is actually six different kinds of cases wrapped up in one case. And they are the most horrific type of cases, other than sexual assaults, which is a topic for another day. I still don't understand how that can happen in a nursing home setting, but it does. Pressure ulcer cases. Because if you boil it down, a pressure ulcer case is day after day, shift after shift, hour after hour, of the staff not meeting the needs of a resident.
And pressure ulcers just don't happen within minutes. They take time to develop. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And they're staged. So there's a stage one, a stage two, a stage three, a stage four. The medical profession is now working on something called unstageable, which is something that goes beyond the four. And what it talks about is the different layers of the skin, how deep it gets. A stage four is usually down to the bone. All the layers of the skin have now rotted away. And, you know, stage one may just start off as a little red circle of the top layer of the skin, almost looking like a little sunburn.
And that's more treatable once you catch it at that point.
One and two, stage one, stage two are treatable, you know, if you catch it. Even a stage three you can start to catch. But by the time it gets to a four, it's treatable, but highly unlikely.
So it sounds like that's some pretty serious neglect to get to stage four.
Oh, it's a traditional case of neglect.
Now, you also talked about falls and risk for falls and that type of thing. How does that play out in a nursing home facility?
Pretty similar to the pressure ulcer issue. However, facilities keep track of falls and fractures. And with an elderly person, we know they have brittle and soft bones by the time they're 75, 85, 95 years old. I've had one client who was 105 years old, fell out of a wheelchair. The industry knows that falls happen within the industry, and the elderly have a high propensity of falls. So they have to do the same thing as they do for pressure ulcers. They have to assess. Then they have to care plan. And then they have to implement the plan. And then they have to have the staff to meet the needs of the residents if they're a high fall risk resident. But a fall with an elderly person that leads to some type of trauma, any type of a fracture, now that resident in all probability is going to be in some type of bedridden state. Now they're at high risk for bed sores. Now they're at high risk for pneumonia because they're immobile. Now they're at high risk for multi-system failure. You see, so it's a domino effect. If an elderly person falls, fractures their hip, may or may not have hip surgery, but all these other things they're now at high risk for. And it happens all the time.
And what are there special considerations for patients with dementia? Are there special issues related to them?
Oh, there always is. The biggest issue is the medication.
Okay.
You know, for a while, and your listeners may have seen the Boston Globe story in January or February of this year that exposed the nursing home industry, and this is quasi-physician issue, of prescribing and using antipsychotic medications for dementia. Dementia is not a psychotic condition, and that should be a no-no. But the major issues with dementia and Alzheimer's is that those residents just need more attention. Some may need some type of one-on-one, maybe during the daytime or maybe during the nighttime because they tend to go to bed very early and get up very early. They need to, dehydration needs to be monitored and watched more frequently. Nutrition needs to be monitored and watched more frequently. A high propensity to get urinary tract infections if you have dementia in elderly, you have a catheter. Yeah, there's a lot more concern. So if a demented or Alzheimer's person is admitted to a nursing home, you got to make sure that that nursing home has the staff and maybe a dedicated unit to care for demented and Alzheimer's residents. And each one is so different. You just can't lump them all into one category. You know, some forget to eat, some remember to eat, some forget to use the bathroom, some don't. You know, and some still love to participate in activities, some don't. Each one has such an individual need. But hey, you know, they're still with us. There's something still going. There's something still cooking. People believe that they can still feel pain and suffering, that they still have some level of memory. They just can't communicate it.
Now, supposing a family decides that they want to go through the legal process, what advice would you give? What do you do in your firm when you have someone coming to you with concerns about their elderly parent or husband or wife or anything like that?
Well, unfortunately, the majority of the time, we get the phone call after something bad has happened. So I can't give them the roadmap on how to look for the good nursing home. You know, something bad happened, we get the call, can you help us? My mom or my dad or my grandma or my grandpa died in a nursing home. That's the most common call we get, a death-related issue that we need to investigate. So one of the very first things we do, I'm big on statistics. Okay, so one of the very first thing we do is I say, what's the name of the nursing home? And we right away start our, we have a database of every single nursing home in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So right away we look it up. Is it a corporate chain? Is it a family ma and pa? Is it a facility that accepts Medicare or Medicaid reimbursement? We try to see, we do an in-depth investigation into the ownership and control of that particular nursing home. And then the second thing we want to do is we want to preserve the story. And there's always two stories to be told. There's the story of what happened. And then there's the story of the person who died. You know, were they a World War II vet? What did they do for a living? What was their contribution to the community? Were they an asset to the community? Because we want to preserve that story as much as we want to find out what happened story. And then we want to somehow or another bring a lawsuit if we can to help improve the quality of care and quality of life in our 450 nursing homes that are in Massachusetts.
Now, in terms of fees, how are these cases, how do you handle these cases? Are they taken on a contingency fee?
Yes. All of our cases are taken on a contingency fee. We, as you know, Frank, in the medical malpractice world, our fees are governed by state law.
And I want to have you hold that thought, because actually there are two thoughts, and the other one is I'm really interested in that roadmap to picking a good nursing facility, home facility. So we'll be back in a minute.